Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. It was a rough start this weekend for President Donald Trump, his team, and the press. Trump said it's war with the media. His spokesman pushed falsehoods. Kellyanne Conway introduced alternative facts. Yesterday brought some fence mending, but what a beginning. Where does this go? This hour on Point, in our 100-day spotlight, the president, this president, and the press. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is the president getting a fair shake? Is the president committed to truth, facts? And how should the press cover President Donald Trump? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. We'll hear in a moment from a skeptic on the news media, but first, joining me from New York is Jim Rutenberg. He is media columnist for the New York Times. Jim, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Let's listen back for just a second to the president, Jim, if we may. He was at the CIA, of course, talking with the officers and had some of his own staff there as well at the agency's headquarters in Langley, Virginia. And he said you'll hear it. He said he's got the most dishonest human beings on earth, and he's in a running war with the media.
The reason you're my first stop is that, as you know, I have a running war with the media. They are among the most dishonest human beings on earth. What? And they sort of made it sound like I had a feud with the intelligence community. And I just want to let you know, the reason you're number one stop, it is exactly the opposite. Exactly. And they understand that, too.
There's a lot to take apart right there. And on the same day, of course, Jim, Saturday, this was the White House press secretary, Sean Spicer, saying that the Trump administration is going to hold the press accountable.
There's been a lot of talk in the media about the responsibility to hold Donald Trump accountable. And I'm here to tell you that it goes two ways. We're going to hold the press accountable as well.
Jim Rutenberg with the New York Times. What is going on at the very start of this administration? There was a press briefing yesterday where there was a different tone. But that first sally right out of the gate on Saturday, the president's first full day as president of the United States, running war with the media, most dishonest people on earth. What's happening at the beginning of this administration, Jim?
Well, let's start just by acknowledging, as you said, that yesterday, Monday, there was a better tone, but we'll get back to that. Mm-hmm. Saturday was horrible. I mean, this is going before, standing in the building that is the brains of the United States kind of intelligence community. It's at times it's war machine, making an allusion to war against the free press. And denigrating everybody in it as dishonest, which of course isn't true. But it's very much, I think, a war he wants to have, and it's incumbent upon the press not to give it to him.
I mean, he started right off saying that talking about a feud with the intelligence community and suggesting that the press made it up, though, as the New York Times, your paper, and everybody else reported, of course, Donald Trump was right in the middle of that himself in the weeks leading up to his inauguration, talking about Nazi-style interactions here and all the rest. I mean, that in itself was not true.
Yeah, and all anybody had to do was go to his Twitter feed to see that he had said what he said about the intelligence community, and the press reported on it. But, you know, he can – again, you don't have to take the press's word for it. You can take his own word for it in his Twitter feed.
It went on, of course, on Friday and into Saturday. The Trump team characterizations of Inauguration Day, the crowds there compared to previous crowds, numbers that were wrong that they were giving from the podium, Sean Spicer at the White House, the president himself saying, you know, it wasn't raining when it was raining. How does this go forward, Jim? How does the press deal with a president's team? And again, you're right. Yesterday, Sean Spicer came out and said, look, we our intention is to give you the truth, and we may disagree sometimes, but that's our intention. But it didn't feel that way on Friday into Saturday. How does the American media deal with this kind of White House interaction?
Well, I think assuming, and I don't want to assume this, but let's just work on the premise that Saturday will happen again.
I.e. the assertion of what is later proved to be falsehoods?
Yes, that that there are falsehoods that emanate from that lectern. I think the press handles it the way it handled it, and that is to just come back with the accurate numbers. But the reason I started out by saying Monday was important to remember too is I think that we've reported that my papers reported and other papers have reported that the Trump brain trust in the end knew Saturday wasn't a good day. They don't want to spend their credibility. To your point, you can't if you say it's not raining and it's raining. It's you know people are living in the world with eyes and ears. They don't want to operate this way. So I, you know, would hope, but I think that the administration will try to do this more in some more traditional fashion when it comes to just accuracy of facts. One can hope.
Maybe, though, of course, also we had then Kellyanne Conway on Sunday on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd telling Chuck that Sean Spicer didn't share a falsehood about the inauguration crowd size. He was giving alternative facts, new phrase to me.
You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered. The
hey,
one
Chuck,
thing he
why?
Got
hey,
right
Chuck.
Was Zeke Miller. Four of the five facts he uttered were just not true. Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
Okay. Alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods. Conway kind of took that. But in the same conversation, when things got testy, Jim Rutenberg, was talking about the relationship with the press, kind of threatening almost, Chuck Todd, if I read this right. Here's another exchange from Meet the Press on Sunday.
But the first time he confronts the public, it's a falsehood?
Chuck, I mean, if we're going to keep referring to our press secretary in those types of terms, I think that we're going to have to rethink our relationship here.
Rethink our relationship here. Jim, what might that mean?
Well, this White House is, during the president-elect phase, there were hints that the Trump administration may boot the working press corps that's worked in the West Wing for decades out of the West Wing, that it's going to change the way access works. And, you know, the president himself likes to say that Twitter lets him get around the press. But, you know, there was a tone in some of the talk from Mr. Spicer and Ms. Conway that reminded me of those post 9/11 Bush days when it was, you know, people need to watch what they say. That said, it's very hard to come in from a campaign to a White House, and all the reporting I have is that they were genuinely rattled at the way their own press coverage went. The principal here, the president, appears to want more kind of credit for what he's accomplished. So there's some frustration that they're going to have to obviously get over for their own good. I mean, for their own effectiveness. I don't think fighting with the press is helping them because they have big agenda items they want to get to, and they don't want to talk about, you know, crowd sizes and the media, you know, when they have big ticket things to pursue.
The Trump administration, through Sean Spicer and more, saying that the press just has it out for Donald Trump. And I want to look at that. I want to look at their charge that there's a kind of just built-in bias against this incoming president. Jim Rutenberg is with us, media columnist for The New York Times. The press struggling in the first days of the Trump administration to get to the facts, or the Trump administration struggling, if that's the right word, to deliver them. Jim, stand by there in New York. Isaac Duverre joins us from Washington right now as well. He's chief Washington correspondent for Politico. And Politico is beefing up their staff to cover the White House. And Isaac's been paying close attention to the whole interaction. Isaac Duverre, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's great to be here.
It is not news that Donald Trump has savaged the press. He did it for months on the campaign trail. I mean, he, in his campaign speeches, would go on for a long time, really ripping in to the press. But now he's president of the United States. We're, what, 2 or 3 days in here. What have we learned in this opening mini chapter, Isaac?
Well, we've learned that the president is paying as much attention to his own press coverage as he was as a candidate and in the transition. If you look at even some of the comments that he made in those early days that weren't paid attention to as much, at one of the inaugural balls, he talked about seeing a woman who was at the inauguration who had been to 40-something of his rallies. And that means that on the day that he was inaugurated president, Donald Trump was watching TV coverage of his own inauguration, right? Which is an interesting thing
to think
about.
Is that a crime? We've seen pictures, photographs of LBJ with three or four TVs in the White House.
Not in the least. I think it's just something to understand about the way that our new president consumes coverage of himself. We know that one of the things that he does every day is watch TV coverage of himself and what's going on. He's very attuned to how that comes across, how he comes across, what's going on. And that has been one of his great successes. This is a man who turned himself into a character in American life, a major character in pop culture, mostly because of his just genius at being able to market himself. You know, his real estate company is more than it is a real estate company, is a branding company that puts his name on buildings all over the world, and that even those that they don't own a great share of. And now he's president of the United States on that power, on that ability that he has, and he pays attention to it all throughout. I don't think it's a surprise that he would watch his own inaugural coverage, but we know that it happened, and we know that then he was paying close attention to the not only coverage of the difference in the crowd size between his inauguration and Barack Obama's inauguration, but also to the number of people that showed up on Saturday at the Women's March in Washington and the women's marches all over the country, and seeing those numbers and the way that the attention was going to how much bigger those crowds were. And it clearly got under his skin.
More than under his skin. I mean, it appeared from Sean Spicer's briefing that there was an effort to rebut the fact of those differences.
It's certainly true, and he was the one who told Sean Spicer to go out to the briefing room. That would not have happened without a direct order from the president himself.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president, President Trump, and the press. He says it's a running war he's in the midst of. The press says, give us the facts, and we're asking what's going on here. Isaac DeVere is with us. He's chief Washington correspondent for Politico, right in the thick of all this, joins us from Washington. Jim Rutenberg is here, media columnist for The New York Times, been paying close attention, former chief political correspondent for The New York Times. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Why the immediate explosion between the Trump White House and the press? What is going on here? Does Donald Trump just insist on his own, even fact-free version of reality, or does the press just have it out for Donald Trump? And what do we do with the White House that embraces alternative facts, i.e., as Chuck Todd said, falsehoods? They can seem fairly harmless. Here was the president at CIA headquarters on Saturday talking about almost a kind of divine intervention and the weather during his inauguration speech.
I said, it was almost raining. The rain should have scared him away, but God looked down and he said, we're not going to let it rain on your speech. In fact, when I first started, I said, oh, no. First line, I got hit by a couple of drops. And I said, oh, this is too bad, but we'll go right through it. But the truth is that it stopped immediately. It was amazing. And then it became really sunny. Then I walked off and it poured right after I left. It poured.
I mean, it makes for a great story, but it's reported that that it began to rain lightly almost exactly as Mr. Trump began to speak, President Trump, and did so throughout his remarks, all 18 minutes, and after he finished. So what do we do with that? At a press briefing yesterday in the White House, Jonathan Carl from ABC News asked if the Trump White House was committed to facts, truth.
I believe that we have to be honest with the American people. I think sometimes we can disagree with the facts. There are certain things that we may miss, we may not fully understand when we come out, but our intention is never to lie to you, Jonathan.
Sean Spicer saying there, our intention is never to lie to you. But, Sean Spicer, this was yesterday. This is, of course, the White House press secretary saying that there's an ongoing press attempt to undermine President Trump.
I think over and over again, there's this constant attempt to undermine his credibility and the movement that he represents. And it's frustrating for not just him, but I think so many of us that are trying to work to get this message out.
And this from Sean Spicer yesterday.
The default narrative is always negative, and it's demoralizing.
Jim Rutenberg, are you persuaded by the press secretary's assertion that it is always their intention now to share the truth? And what about his complaint of a default narrative that's always negative?
Well, to your first question, I sure hope so. And it was, you know, extraordinary that the question had to be asked. And that, but to Sean's credit, he answered it and in a, what seemed to be a sincere way. And that was heartening. And yesterday's a good example, though, because the day started out and they got – I was on MSNBC in the morning when Mr. Trump had a round table with CEOs. And the panel on the cable network he thinks is out to get him was very positive. This is what he needs to be doing. This mm-hmm. is what he ran on. This looks like a really good morning for him. Mr. Spicer's press conference, press briefing, while, you know, there were some issues, everyone said, hey, that's a better tone. He has a congressional dinner with – you know, this is what President Obama never did. And then what's the headline out of that is it turns out that at this dinner, Mr. Trump reasserted a false assertion that some millions of voters voted illegally for Hillary Clinton, thus the popular vote loss. And there we have it. That's kind of – that was his doing. I mean, that day was going a certain way, and in comes a false curveball that throws the coverage because that's extraordinary. That's news, and we're in the truth business.
Jim Rutenberg, Isaac DeVere, please stand by. Molly Hemingway joins us in a minute from The Federalist, but we've got callers as well. Gilly in Austin, Texas. Gilly, thank you for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that the press should go harder. I think that Donald Trump's administration pushing falsehoods and alternative facts is frightening and authoritarian. When Kellyanne Conway said, this is what we're pushing and this is what you need to believe, that personally frightened me. And my first thought was, it's the press's responsibility to hold their feet to the fire and risk being pushed out regardless of the threats that they make. They turn everything around. They're the victims. The press is mean to us, but the truth is that they are not telling us the truth. And maybe they made a turnaround yesterday, but just this morning, Donald Trump did it again by telling the business leaders at his meeting this morning that the business community was not friendly. And you know, it's just not true.
I guess that's a big enough characterization that you might argue over it. But do you feel confident so far, Gilly, from the campaign season and from these first few days that the American press will stand up for facts here, will dig and find and demand the facts?
I believe I was very heartened by what Chuck Todd did on Sunday, and I really, really want to see more of that. I think CNN, they did something where they checked facts before they put him on the air, and I want to see more of that. I don't think he deserves live coverage if he's going to continue to spread alternative facts.
It's pretty tough when it's the president, but we've got it, Gilly, and I appreciate your call. Let me get one more, if I may, from Oklahoma, Kingfisher, Oklahoma. Robin, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
On the press situation, when a press secretary that is an employee of the citizens of this nation, when he steps forward and he lies, they're not alternative facts, they're not unsubstantiated information, those are lies that they intentionally wrote, that they scripted, that they decided that the president wanted those things said. And our press secretary comes out and he intentionally lies to the press. They savage the individual reporters and they expect everybody to sit there and take it. My advice for the reporters is if they won't answer the first reporter's question, the second reporter asks the same question. And everybody continues to ask that same question until it's either answered or somebody leaves. Either the press secretary leaves or the reporters themselves leave. It is not false information. It's lies, and they're intentional. They are gauged to do something to us.
Robin, I appreciate your call as well. Isaac, you've got your squad out there covering. We've been watching the press interactions. Is there the kind of solidarity that our caller from Oklahoma is asking about? If one reporter asks a tough question to the Trump administration and gets kind of swatted down, are others prepared to step up and ask it next? Or you know, is there a risk of people who are more aggressive in seeking the facts being carved out and shut down and the rest of the press corps being intimidated?
Oh, well, that's the worry. What we did see in the one press conference that Trump has had since being elected, and should be noted, since last summer in New York during the transition, there was a reporter from CNN who tried to ask a question to, at that point, the president-elect, and he was dismissed as fake news by Mr. Trump, and there was no movement among the other reporters there to try to give that reporter the floor or ask the question that he was asking for the most part. So, look, this is a very difficult thing. The news business is competitive, obviously, and people are always looking to get a question in. Donald Trump is a person who knows well how to use that to his advantage and use the competition between reporters to get more attention for what he wants. He learned it very well in playing the New York Post and the New York Daily News off of each other going back to the 1970s. This is not character all that much different for him. It's a difference of degree. Obviously, it's much bigger and much more intense and a much more serious stuff since he's the president of the United States. We'll see how it goes over the course of these next couple of weeks. We had one press briefing so far by Sean Spicer. Today is another one. Tomorrow is another one after that. Every day of the week, the White House press secretary, if they follow the form of previous press secretaries, will show up and answer questions from the press. They have gotten very tense at previous times. Jay Carney, when he was press secretary for Barack Obama for sort of the second half of Obama's first term and the beginning of the second term, had a very aggressive, confrontational relationship with the press.
Jim, what about when the president was talking, the brand new president was talking about a running war with the press at the CIA and talking about journalists as among the most dishonest people on earth? We heard applause and laughter there. It's a little confusing because the president takes a kind of squad with him, whether to press briefings or to that meeting. It's almost like a cheerleading squad. I wasn't there. I couldn't tell what was CIA and what was his traveling posse. But it's a new sound effect in his interaction with the press. Even on TV, you can't exactly see sometimes who's cheering and applauding. That is a dynamic that's totally unfamiliar to me in presidential press briefings, Jim.
Well, that the symbolism of that, because, and Isaac might know better, but there were stories yesterday that the cheering was emanating from President Trump's staff. One would really hope that's the case because the CIA is not supposed to be political. And there again, there's something chilling, the thought of the intelligence community clapping at an assertion that the United States press corps is dishonest. But, you know, here's the key for the news media is that we're not in a war with President Trump. The symbolism of that undercuts our mission. And I think we have to be very careful not to engage in it. That's not what we do. We report the facts. We report the truth. We go where the story takes us. And politicians often don't like it. Sometimes they do. And the minute that we let this become defined as a war is the minute that we really start losing credibility. So, you know, people have to stay calm, not get kind of pulled into this, especially there's been some action on Twitter, I think, where reporters get a little bit goaded. And at other times they do it themselves where there's a sort of tone on Twitter that they wouldn't have in their own articles, their own institutions wouldn't have it on their air. I think that from the press standpoint, it's calm and steady. Do your job.
Jim Rutenberg with The New York Times, Isaac DeVere with Political. Please stand by. Molly Hemingway joins us right now from Washington. She's a senior editor at The Federalist. She's written several articles talking about why a good chunk of the American public has its own trust issues with media news coverage. Molly Hemingway, welcome back to One Point. Thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
So what do you make of the sort of instant clash over the weekend? And what's the context in which we should see it, Molly?
Right. I'm not sure how instant it is so much as a continuation of a long-standing dysfunctional relationship between Trump and the media. And it's a relationship that I think serves them, or maybe it's better to say a codependent relationship. They're both well served by it. Trump gets to have an enemy in the media, and the media get to have a lot of stories where they are the center of of operations as well.
I'm not sure most of the media really enjoys that. And by instant, I simply mean that he had only been president for less than a day. And there had been a presumption that perhaps that combative sort of brawler style of the campaign trail with that fierce, sometimes over-the-top language would go away when he was president. It did not in that instant.
It won't, and I don't think that this relationship is serving the public interest very well. And there is a hostility on both sides that has no reason to stop. Unfortunately, the incentives are all aligned in such a way as people are reticent to change. There is a larger context, too. I loved what the callers were saying about a tough adversarial press and having reporters work together to ask questions. The context is that the trust has already been lost by the media, and so it'll be very hard for us to have a strong response to an administration that does tell lies because we didn't do a great job over the last 8 years of holding the previous administration accountable. There's a great piece in the New York Times last year about the Obama administration bragging about creating an echo chamber to help push the Iran deal by focusing on certain narratives that got fed to the press. There wasn't strong pushback at times like that. I mean, this is not the first time a press secretary has lied to the press. And in previous instances, we didn't see enough pushback, and that caused a real breakdown in trust. So we're not on solid footing now to push back because it just seems like a continuation of the war that was pretty overt during the 2016 campaign.
Isaac, what about it? Is it fair? There's always a presidential effort to shape the national narrative or even global narrative about what's going on. Is that of a kind with what we're seeing under Donald Trump?
Of course. And I should say that I don't think I can remember any prominent politician that I've covered in my career who hasn't complained about press coverage and press coverage not being unfair and only telling about the bad things and not the good things.
But Molly's saying it's same old here in a way. Maybe nothing new. Or maybe there is. If there's a more deliberate willingness to give a falsehood, Molly. I don't want to misrepresent what you're saying.
I'm just saying we're not on good footing because of how we haven't pushed back in the past.
Is there something different here?
There's definitely a different kind altogether.
Okay. Isaac, what about the difference?
And that's certainly true. Look, one of the things that then-President-elect Trump said when there were the questions about the intelligence community and the report about the Russian involvement is that he put out a statement saying these are the same people who said that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And so what he is getting at there is that sense that, of course, we know that there weren't and that there was a problem in how the Bush administration then put that out and, of course, how that was interpreted and taken by the media and run with and given a pretext for war. That happened repeatedly through the Obama administration, not to the extent of generating a war, but there were a lot of things that the Obama folks did to shape and twist the coverage. And even so, Obama every single day basically would figure out some way to complain that he wasn't getting good media coverage. And so this is what goes on. But I think that
What's different if there's something different?
There's an intensity from Trump and a willingness to take advantage of it, of the dispute that happens between the media and a politician in power. And I think that he is right to see that there is an antagonism towards him. Of course, you know, when he there's not the media. There are news organizations. And they're not really news organizations. There are human reporters. And when reporters are attacked, they are human beings. And, yeah, it creates a confrontational relationship. He does that for some advantage to himself, and he does it to some disadvantage to himself. But when you've had reporters who have been singled out by him in speeches and then been attacked on Twitter or had things sent to their homes or had to hire security guards, it's not possible for journalists to not have a reaction to that and feel like there is an antagonistic relationship.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron, partnering with sustainable farms, fisheries, and ranchers to deliver all you need to create incredible home-cooked meals. Ingredients come pre-measured, so there's no food waste. Recycle the packaging or mail it back, postage free, and Blue Apron will recycle for you. Rediscover how fun cooking can be. Enjoy seasonally inspired recipes and explore new cuisines. No commitment. Get meals only when you want. Get your first 3 meals free plus free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president, President Trump, and the press. He's talking about a running war with the press. A lot of the press saying, just please give us the facts, not falsehoods. Of course, it's always the job of the press to dig for that in any administration. But there was a striking, startling tone right out of the gate here, straight out of the campaign season. Many thought it might go away. Over this weekend, it did not. Jim Rutenberg is with us from the New York Times, media columnist there. Isaac DeVere from Politico, chief Washington correspondent. Molly Hemingway, senior editor at The Federalist. You can join us this hour. What are you seeing in this relationship between the brand new president now and the press? Where does this go? And how should the American news media, the press, cover this president of the United States? Donald Trump at the CIA headquarters on Saturday, he was really upset about the coverage of the turnout for his inauguration. Talked a lot about it before the CIA.
I turn on the thing, and by mistake, I get this network. And it showed an empty field. And it said, we drew 250,000 people. Now, that's not bad, but it's a lie. We had 250,000 people literally around, you know, in the little bowl that we constructed. That was 250,000 people. The rest of the, you know, 20-block area all the way back to the Washington Monument was packed. So we caught them, and we caught them in a beauty. And I think they're going to pay a big price.
Well, no, it wasn't a lie. It wasn't packed all the way back to the Washington Monument. They're going to pay a big price. I'm not sure what that means. There's a threat in that, or maybe he's just talking about public confidence. Jim, are you worried? Molly brings up, and you can find numbers in the surveys about the public having confidence problems with the press. Are you worried that President Trump may win that battle for confidence?
You know, yes and no. If you look at, you earlier showed, you know, how Mr. Trump said that it, you know, was heaven sent that there was no rain. Mm. Yet Americans who watched the inaugural service saw Reverend Franklin Graham tell him that the rain that was falling was a fortuitous sign.
It was raining. It was
God.
Raining. Yeah, yeah.
So you can say that the press has trust issues with the public, which it does. But the public again can see what it sees on its television, or if they were there in person, they know what happens. So I don't think that if the press loses that fight over a fact like that, then there's a larger societal issue. You know, but I do think that in terms of the trust issue, some things we cannot do about it. We are the messenger. Often you want to kill the messenger. This is dates back to the human civilization. On the other hand, we do a disservice when we rush headlong with a story that's not true, when it seems to be playing to this war idea that the President Trump is
like forwarding. What? So, like what? Rushing to something not true?
You know, if you say there was a mistake, and it was an honest human mistake over the weekend in a pool report that Mr. Trump's staff had removed a bust from the Oval Office of Martin Luther King.
That was not true. It was corrected, but that came out in the report. Yeah.
It was corrected immediately, and it's a human fact. We are human, so mm-hmm. This stuff happens. We do want to minimize those kind of mistakes because they feed the narrative that other people want out there that was on purpose to get him. And, you know, that part's not true. I don't think I know Zeke Miller. He's an honest reporter. He made a mistake. But minimizing mistakes, not rushing forward, taking your time, just doing the job again calmly with clear eyes.
Mark in Austin, Texas. Mark, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was wondering if you could help me understand it seems like there's an aversion in the press to just calling Trump's statements lies, especially in headlines. I think the New York Times had a headline this morning that was the first time I've seen the word lie. Otherwise, it's falsehoods, unverified claims. But these are lies. Why not call them lies?
Molly Hemingway, what do you say?
Well,
There are many reasons why you might not want to call something a lie, even if you strongly believe it's false or know it to be false. And the main reason is that lie deals with issues of motivation. And since reporters can't read the hearts and minds of the people they cover, they should be reticent to use a word like lie. You can say, here's what someone said, here's what the most objective facts on the issue are, and that is actually a stronger way to present the case because you are calm and you're refuting it calmly, and people respond well to that. There's a larger issue of just how this over-the-top hostility to Donald Trump serves to, yes, definitely invigorate people who already hate Donald Trump, but it causes a lot of other people to just tune out and feel like someone's not getting a fair shake. There's also an overreaction to, I mean, this is a guy who's been in public life for decades, and he has spoken this way for decades. And for decades, we all knew it, and we all understood it, and we all took it a certain way. And now, just in the last year, everyone's reacting a completely different way.
Well, he wasn't president, Molly, and he wasn't campaigning to be president. It's quite a different thing.
I'm just saying we all thought Donald Trump was a very fun, popular figure, and we understood that he did this negotiating deal where he said something outlandish and then negotiates to a middle ground. The American public heard the media freak out for a year over Donald Trump, and they still voted him into office. So that should be a loud warning call that maybe we need to realign ourselves or reposture ourselves in how we deal with him. Maybe don't take the bait. We are always saying he shouldn't take the bait. He shouldn't exaggerate. That goes also for us. We need to think about yesterday, for instance, we spent a lot of time still talking about crowd size.
Yeah.
We also should have talked about the substantive things that happened from the White House yesterday.
Well, okay, let me take that to you, Isaac. I mean, media freaking out over facts and exaggeration. I hear what Molly's saying, but at the same time, this is now the president. And
yes,
if you can't trust certain things, how do you know what's going on with the republic? And when it comes to serious things, Molly says pay attention to serious things. But if someone will, to our Austin caller's point, lie about whether it's raining, it's got to make you a little nervous about other things as well.
Well, and in fact, I did a story about this over the weekend when Kellyanne Conway had said the alternative facts thing, and that first appearance by Sean Spicer at the White House podium about crowd size. This is not about something that's only okay. How big were the crowds? It's do we approach the government now with skepticism that we all should as journalists, or
haven't we always approached it with skepticism?
Is that do we continue to approach it with skepticism, or do we approach it with doubt? And I think that's a different thing. The people, what I did was I spoke to people who work in national security and intelligence, who said that they are worried that what could happen here is we could be in a situation where there is word that there was an attack or an attempt at an attack, a terrorist attack, or a claim of one group being responsible for it that from the White House. Do we now take that as a skeptical thing and say, okay, well, that's the information that the government is giving us. We've learned to trust on national security issues that usually the government does what it can to put out the factual information. Or do we start from a place of doubt? And what are the consequences of that?
I mean, you've written that this kind of thing can lead to death. National security people talking with you saying this could put the United States in a really difficult situation.
And put soldiers' lives at risk.
What were they talking about there? How?
They were talking about how, look, if we are, what if the president or the White House says that Iran is violating the terms of the nuclear deal from the last administration, that the last administration got in place, in an attempt to undercut that deal, but they're actually not violating it. Then we could be heading toward a confrontation with Iran that would put lives at risk. What if we have a situation with North Korea where there's some version of facts that's put out about what they're doing, and it is not able to be aligned with other countries. They say that other things are going on, and we can't form an international coalition to deal with that. What if Adam Schiff, who's the ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee in the House, said to me that what if Trump and Putin are they have a conversation, and Trump says, oh, we agreed that Russia would take all of its troops out of the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen. These are real consequences.
Mm-hmm. David in Charlotte, North Carolina. David, you're on the air. What do you think?
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that the press has earned the distrust of Trump supporters, of which I am one.
Okay.
And also, it's been over the last 8 years. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your health plan, you can keep your health plan. You had a video of one of the architects of Obamacare that was put out basically saying that they lied to get it through. And this comes out, and it just reinforces what we already think about you people. And then Mr. Rutenberg, I believe, wrote an article in the New York Times saying basically we have to hold Trump to a different standard because he does lie. At least that was my interpretation of it. Thank you.
Well, David, let me ask you, what should the press do if it appears that falsehoods are being dished up from the White House?
I mean, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it is the history of the press, especially over the last 8 years, has been to where we don't trust you people anymore. Because of stuff that you did not talk about with Obama. The IRS scandal was huge to us, to paraphrase Mr. Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge scandal to us, and you guys didn't talk about it hardly at all in the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Rutenberg, what do you say to that?
Well, I'll start with the like your doctor, keep your doctor. That was, I believe, the PolitiFact lie of the year.
Only after years of reading it that it was true.
But it was. It was PolitiFact noted it was a lie. And
By which you mean it was called out very prominently as a lie.
But only after years of PolitiFact saying that it was true.
Mm-hmm.
And only after years
Point
of
taken.
Other fact-checkers saying it
okay.
was true. And this
okay.
is a context
yeah.
that needs to be included.
Yeah. But I think it's exaggerated to say it wasn't covered. I mean, it is. It was the lie of the year. Maybe not on the time frame it should have been. I don't know. Maybe you're right. If at least some people may feel that way. It was the lie of the year. And so things were covered, and in terms of – there's a column I wrote that comes up a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I think the caller kind of accurately did portray it in this case, and that was – what that column said was that you have to – and I think it's been twisted in some renderings, but
okay.
was that if there's – if a candidate is repeatedly lying 10 times and another candidate's lying 2, you have to represent that. You have to go where those facts take you,
mm-hmm.
and it's not comfortable in – you know, what's lost from the conversation sometimes is that Mr. Trump was something we haven't seen before as a complete political novice who didn't have a kind of record in public office. It's our job to try to figure out what that looks like. That's new.
And who, as Molly says, use over-the-top exaggeration as part of a business negotiation strategy sometimes in his other life. But now we're in a public arena.
Right. So it meant kind of covering him the way you cover everyone, but it meant it was going to go in places you weren't used to being.
Mm-hmm.
That said, is the press perfect? No. Can you go back and look at 10 stories you could have done differently? Sure. But I think that some things that people say weren't covered were actually covered. They were covered more passionately in ideological press, and maybe they were undercovered in centrist, mainstream press.
Mm-hmm.
And completely miscovered in counter-ideological press.
Molly, how does the press properly thread the needle here? On the one hand, the President Trump may want to change some things, some big things, and he's been elected, and there's nothing inherently wrong with change. On the other hand, the country deserves to have this conversation with the president based in fact.
We desperately need the press to be holding this administration accountable, and I do not have much hope of it until we come to terms with how much we have messed up in recent years. I'm so glad the caller made the points he did. This is a context in which newsrooms are just completely oblivious and defensive. Until we take responsibility for how we treated a huge swath of the American public over the last 8 years, taking all of their criticism.
What's your characterization of treating? What do you mean by treating a huge swath? Just clarify if you would be.
The IRS example was a great one. That was that was a huge scandal that didn't have the pressure that you see scandals of other administrations treated with. The issue of the PolitiFact rating something a lie of the year came after they rated it true 6 different times. times. And that was an administration that repeated that falsehood repeatedly. And instead of it being pushed back by the media, it was carried by the media. And it takes, it could be anything from when there was the terrorist attack on the anniversary of 2000 of 9/11, and it was treated as if it was responsible, as if a video was responsible. We didn't see pushback. We saw the opposite. Every single thing that the previous administration did had a, there was at least a receptive element in the press, and criticism of it was treated as if it was nothing other than racism or bigotry.
We could argue about that. We've got a couple of minutes. Look forward with us for a second, though. Here we are now. It's the dawn of the Trump administration. You say we desperately need fact-checking here. How will that be accomplished with the sort of opening hostility that we saw from the White House?
The well has been poisoned, and I think the first thing we need to do is really come to terms with how serious the problem was. Secondly, we cannot react over the top to everything. We just need to report facts and not push narratives. And then finally, I think we need to really think about some systematic changes. There need to be more people in newsrooms who don't view things all the same way, who don't all think that Trump is the worst thing ever, and who didn't all think that Barack Obama was the best thing ever. We need ideological diversity to balance out our stories, to think about, you know, what, oh, gosh, it seems this IRS scandal is really something important to other people.
I've got 1 minute. Let me give it to Isaac. Isaac, what do you say to that perspective at the dawn of this administration?
A value to having people come in from different perspectives on things. I think when you look at the fact that there wasn't a newsroom in America that thought that Donald Trump was going to be president until whatever it was, 11 o'clock on November 8th, that speaks to the fact that people were not fully in touch with what was going on in the minds of a lot of Americans. And that is something that obviously needs to be addressed going forward.
Jim, is standing up for some traditional American values pushing a narrative?
In terms of what?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump has been pretty cavalier on a number of fronts. Maybe it's just go for the facts, go for the facts, go for the facts. I don't like to think that's a narrative.
Right. I agree with you, though I also agree with what Molly said and what Isaac said, is that the more diverse a newsroom is in the backgrounds of its reporters, the better, and the better the understanding of Trump supporters, the better.
Let's start right here at the beginning of this administration with that commitment to facts, wherever they go. But let's put the press right on that job and hopefully trust, well, I don't know about trust, but look for the White House to support the same. Let's have facts. Molly Hemingway at The Federalist, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Jim Rutenberg, The New York Times, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
And Isaac DeVere, Chief Washington Correspondent for Politico, thank you, Isaac.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.